The future belongs to those who control the culture, and the culture belongs to those who control the conversation. So we are having the conversations you wish you could have at church to build a safe and vibrant community. This is the Oz Table Talk Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Table Talk. So we are talking about environmental stewardship. Now, this is kind of hot buttony in a lot of ways, but it was actually Matt's suggestion. So Matt, what brought this to mind to be a topic?
Oh, look, I don't think you can go past turning on a TV and not seeing some political debate about climate change or obviously the idea of environmental stewardship grows off the back of that. But yeah, I think with a lot of the idea of our world is changing and you know, humans are having a negative impact on it, how are we as Christians meant to be responsible for that, and what are our accountabilities for that? So that was certainly the idea for starting this episode off.
Well, just like, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but a lot of the Christians that I hear, or you know, particularly, you know, it's probably not exclusively this way, but particularly in more traditional Christian circles, you know, I hear this sentiment of like, if we believe that Jesus is coming back soon, then why should we bother with fixing the planet when it's about to get a reboot anyway?
Cop out.
All right. Well, if it is a cop out, why is it a cop out?
Well, because it's the idea that those two points are, you know, mutually exclusive to each other. Mm-hmm. Like, at what point do you sit there and go, I can't save or I can't minister to people in the world because I'm trying to take care of the environment, or vice versa, that I can't take care of the environment because I'm too busy trying to reach lost souls? Mm-hmm. Like, that's just dumb. Like, sorry, I shouldn't be so blunt, but maybe that's what we just need a bit to kick this one off. But the idea that you can't have a positive impact in the environment because you're looking to reach lost souls, I think it's just the biggest kind of, I don't truly care about the issue enough to bother making a difference.
And by the way, nobody said anything about doing evangelism. It's just a cop-out because we think, oh, the earth's going to burn anyway. Like, we don't really care about people.
Yeah. but that's what people use the argument. It's like, oh, yeah, well, I'm going to be too busy reaching lost souls to change.
To bother, yeah.
Yeah, but it comes off this. Sorry, just had keys in the pocket. No wonder they were so uncomfortable.
There you go.
But it comes off the idea of people are going to be these superheroes that, you know, change it themselves, mm-hmm. and we know that's not sustainable. It's not achievable. In the same way that you by yourself are not going to reach the entire world and save them all anyway. So if you're not able to strap your undies to the outside and be Superman, then like, let's stop faking it and actually look at what are the achievable goals that we can do. That, you know, allow us to, as Christians, be environmental stewards, as well as, you know, positive outreach. Mm-hmm.
Another thing we're often taught and teach at church is the character that we develop now will be ours in heaven, right?
Yep.
So shouldn't we be getting into the habit of looking after the planet now rather than later? I mean, when God goes and remakes the earth, are we just going to go,
here's another one to destroy.
Yeah, let's just start it all over again.
Because I don't think there's a lot of room for debate on the fact that man-made pollution has been causing disruption to ecosystems. For the sake of time, if we don't want to get into the debate about rising temperatures, dropping temperatures, you know, with the whole climate change argument, you know, we could talk about melting ice sheets and the top, you know, meters of ocean warming up, everything like that, whatever. We don't necessarily have to go into that. But what we can say is, you know, we were just looking up the fact that there's this huge garbage island in the middle of the Pacific, 1.6 million square kilometers, like twice the size of Texas, three times the size of France, just floating around in the northern Pacific Ocean, and that's 100% contributed by man. No other natural organism, life, or you know, any other kind of species of animal, you know, started making plastic bags and chucking them in, you know, runoffs and things like that. I haven't come across Atlantis, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't under
those
there
beavers.
Either.
Kill those beavers.
Yeah, that's right. It's those beavers. They're eating all the trees.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
but I mean, I think, you know, and I guess I'm probably somewhat representative of a portion of our audience where I personally don't think that there's, I think there is a lot of what we see in the climate change debate that isn't that we can't modify as humans, but there's a lot of stuff, just like what you just said there, that we can, and the stuff that we are in control of, I think we do have responsibility to take action over, right?
Absolutely, and I think it goes beyond a responsibility. I think this is something as Christians, like when we understand our sacred charges, we're held accountable for this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God gave us this world into stewardship, and regardless of who's the prince of this world, we understand that, you know, Jesus came and broke the shackles of that to allow us the freedom of choice, but that extends into freedom of choice for several other things.
Even after sin, though, that was what God wanted Adam and Eve to do, wasn't it?
Mm. It just made it harder.
Yeah.
You know, but that wasn't exactly like, oh, this is your get out of jail free card. No. You know, the world's going to start growing thorns and it'll be blistering and everything like that. Don't worry about it, mate. Just, you know, just get through the other end. You'll be right.
Yeah. But I think we're pretty ignorant if we think God doesn't care about the environment.
Yeah.
And if God cares about something, it makes sense that we should too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, imagine how he feels every time another species goes endangered and then disappears.
Yeah.
You know, like
that's something that he created, he molded, he nurtured, he fed. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, he's put huge amount of investment into nature and we are just rampantly destroying it.
Yeah.
Like I think a couple of weeks ago I came across an article saying that there are no male white rhinos left in the wild. They're all in captivity.
Mm-hmm.
And so unless they can get a proper sustainable breeding program,
yeah,
they'll be gone in the next 20 years. Like, you know, and that's something that, again, we, like, that man hasn't had 100%. It wasn't exactly like, you know, any tigers or natural predators took him out. It's because man wanted horns. Mm. And so they just started killing rhinos for it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Stupid. Yeah. Even a bit closer to home, did you know that the Tassie devil is no longer, like, the ones that are in Tasmania are contaminated with a virus on their face?
Yeah, they got that face tumor cancer stuff, yeah.
And so they're trying to rehabilitate them on the main island because at the moment all the Tasmanian population are going to die. And like, you know, what's caused that? You know, what's causing this tumor outbreak? Well, I would imagine it's the changes in the environment that we've made in Tasmania.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, deforestation or whatever.
Well, you can only spray so many chemicals around the air before you start questioning what the effect it's going to have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, to be fair,
let's
be real about it. Like, really, with this conversation, let's be real. Like, there's so many times, I think, when this conversation's brought up, especially in a church environment, there's this hopelessness that we put into it. Like, oh, well, look, I'm not doing it, so what can I do to change it? I can't do anything.
We're all contributing.
But that's right, we are. Like, if enough of us stop buying, you know, food that's had chemicals sprayed on it, they're going to stop spraying chemicals on food.
Mm-hmm.
Like, duh, it's a business. They're going to supply to what we demand for.
Mm, yeah.
And if we demand for organic produce or sustainably grown foods or whatever it is, you know, whatever your conscience points you towards, like, people, like, the business will cater for that because they want to make money.
Yeah,
like,
they'll go wherever the money is.
That's
and we as consumers dictate that.
That's right. And the problem is we don't understand that power properly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So where is the balance, though, right? Because I think, you know, you could make a case for the fact that while it is true, like you were saying, that it's a cop-out just to say that, well, you know, world's going to burn anyway, why should I bother? This is true. But if I was to pour all of my effort and my energy into, you know, whatever you want to call it, environmental activism or whatever, trying to save endangered species and all the rest of it, sure, some people can do that. I'm not criticizing them. But what I'm saying is, if all the people that were in the churches all focused their attention there and didn't focus on the Great Commission at all, then that would be just as improper, right? Like, that's not what we're called to do either. So how do we know, where is that line that says, I am doing enough versus I am not doing enough?
Well, I think a big thing on this is, what's God calling you towards?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I believe God will call people towards environmental stewardship. I think Steve Irwin, I don't know if he was even a professed Christian, but I think the Holy Spirit influenced him, because you look at his life statement And his life statement was to just get as much money as he could to pour it into environmental conservation. Mm. No one else has been so open with a vision like that. And you look at the vision of it and the impact he has had to this day because of what he did. Mm-hmm. Like, that is insane. Like, that is a major standpoint for a lot of people to wake up to something that no one else was talking about. Mm-hmm. Like, he was doing that, you know, back in the 90s when people didn't understand that we were damaging the world to the extent we were. And he's just out there like, I'll take $1 million from whoever will give me $1 million so I can buy more land, so I can make it a conservation area, so I can save the environment.
Mm.
Like, I really think God is calling some people towards that.
So you're saying it's more like a calling or a spiritual gift that people
I think the given. Activism
mm-hmm.
can be.
Yeah.
Okay? And I want to say can be, because yeah. I don't know people's hearts, and mm-hmm. so I can't mm-hmm. guarantee it. But at the same time, too, mm-hmm. what's this idea of a balance, and maybe it was the way that the question came out, but it seems like we've got to give a... Like, we've got to... take something away from our lifestyles to balance that. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's the case at all, because we can be responsible and accountable as environmental stewards in what we do already in our day-to-day lives.
Mm-hmm.
Are we using one-use plastics? Mm-hmm. Like, being serious, are we using one-use plastics? And if we are, how can we get rid of that? Mm-hmm. Because there's processes and ways to get away from that. Are we recycling where we can, you know? Are we looking for reusable or sustainable mm-hmm. products to help us in our industries? Mm-hmm. You know, when you go out and you buy a new bed,
mm-hmm.
are you looking at the timber frame and checking that it was harvested from a responsible wood source?
Mm.
Like, and the thing is as more and more people are aware of what we're doing, of those kind of responsible, sustainable practices, the businesses will supply
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, sometimes it means, like, you know what? For the investment of this furniture, I've got to pay another $50 or I've got to pay another $100.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the accountability we're being held to, because ultimately, when we stray from that idea of, well, I can't be accountable for my environmental choices because I'm not really the one who's doing the damage to it,
mm-hmm.
we're just tricking ourselves.
So, I mean, and I think that's great, all really practical. What we've been doing is largely logic, extrapolation, yeah, that sort of thing. But what are the biblical principles that are in play here? I mean, we're talking at a very high philosophical kind of level, but if we were to dig down to some of the motivating factors or what the Bible says about the environment, what are some of the things that stick out for you guys? Like, for me, one of the things, so just while you guys can give it some thought, one of the things that stood out for me was that Adam, at the very first, was God's steward. Mm-hmm. God intended mankind to tend the garden. That was the entire purpose. And that was to be a blessing to the garden, but also a blessing to man, because mm-hmm. that was the, you know, the profession, if you like, that God gave Adam.
Mm-hmm.
So that was number one.
Yeah, I was just actually going to... get that verse for it. It's in 2, I just can't find.
Genesis?
Yeah.
I think just while you look that up, I haven't actually studied this, so I'm going to rely on you guys to perhaps answer my question here.
Mm-hmm.
But in Revelation, where it says that, where it talks about those, God will, it's talking about God's judgment, that he'll judge those that, destroy those that destroy the earth. Is that a reference to the earth itself, or is that a reference to the people?
No idea.
I'd have to study it.
Yeah, I'd have to study it to clear it up. But I would say that if that reads at face value, that again, it's just an indicator that God does care about those that are, you know, destroying the earth for their own personal gain. As an example,
do you find it, Matty?
Yeah. Sorry, it was in 1. The particular verse I was looking for. But obviously, when God kind of gave the commission to man and woman, he said, you know, be fruitful, multiply, you know, go into the world. And there's several words that they use. There's subdue, there's take dominion. I'm trying to think what the NIV uses. Doesn't matter. Anyway, there's several other words that they kind of use to give the same idea that God gave the responsibility of this earth and its creation into the hands of humankind, because
mm-hmm.
they were the ones created in his image to be seen as the caretakers of this world.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, biblically, there's that mandate. And that does, if we believe the Bible, that doesn't change, and that the mandates God gives us doesn't change. Like when Jesus died on the cross, he didn't say, well, this does away with, you know, the old law, which is your, you know, care for the environment. Like, and I think mankind, we've always had a hard time grasping onto some concepts. God's love's probably up there at the very top, mm-hmm. because we don't see,
that.
We don't understand perfect love, but this idea of caretaking too, I think we miss that a lot as well. And that's what relates into where we sometimes put a blinker view on and we go, well, I'm trying to do the right thing. And so as long as I'm doing the right thing, then I can only be, you know, but here's just a thought, right? Here's a thought. Here's a vision, right? We as Christians say we've got the truth and we've got this understanding, but does that mean that we can't also try and help with the re-education of a fallen nature of man? Mm-hmm. If we understand the mandates God gave us, you know, does that not give us an opportunity for us to talk to the people around us, fellow believers, in conversations, and encourage environmental stewardship, to hold ourselves accountable, to make a group and make a following of it? We see, and you talked about the media paints things different ways.
Yeah.
The media often paints, you know, some degree of environmental activists to be, you know, left-wing nutties. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, you know, to some degree, some don't do some don't do a lot of favors for them. I don't want to say a lot, because I feel that you always find that whenever something's put into the media, they grab the smallest portion that gets the most views.
Mm-hmm. Something that sells the show.
Yep. Absolutely. So they're always going to look for what's the most edgy, what's the most, you know, going to stir people up just so they can get the views. And that's the business area. And we can argue the corruptness about that anyway. But there's no reason why, as Christians, we should see ourselves as separate from them. Mm-hmm. You know, we should be willing to support environmental work in our belief system. But I've been talking most of this. And Dave, I've seen you looking at that Bible, that particular page, for several minutes now. So you must have something profound there.
It sort of fit in a while back, so it's probably not relevant just right now. But I do think what you're saying is important, so I'll jump on the back of that instead. I think what we should have been doing is we should have been at the forefront of activism,
mm-hmm.
but we should have been at the forefront of activism in a positive way.
Yes.
And I think a lot of activism is not positive. Mm-hmm. And yes, like you say, the media grabs that and makes the most of it, right? Yeah, we get it. But a lot of it's not. You know, let's just be real. You know, there are a lot of people out there who are very extreme with their views, and that turns other people away. What we should have been doing is we should have been approaching it in a sensible fashion, and like you said, gaining a following for a good cause.
Mm-hmm.
I think when our particular denomination started out, that was what happened with, for example, abolition, you know, of the slave trade in America. Mm-hmm. They were really, really, you know, excited about that, you know. Getting rid of that corruptness out of their, you know, political environment, right? And they did that mostly in a very good way, and they developed a positive following to begin with. And I think that's probably a good example of what we should have been doing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty passionate about health reform, mm-hmm. and I feel that that's one way in which we can help the environment in a really powerful way. And like you've mentioned before, you know, we can say, oh, but I'm just one person. Yeah, but all it takes is every one person, you know, making that choice. And so that starts with me, right?
Yeah.
And so I might not be able to change the world with everybody else's decisions, but I just changed it with mine. And then if we, as a corporate denomination, got on board with that and corporately decided to all make that choice, then, we've just, you know, leveraged a movement now.
Yeah.
What if we as a worldwide group of Christians, what if we ate, you know, one meal without meat a week, kind of thing like that? And I know in an Adventist sphere, you'll find there's a lot of vegetarians, but in the wider Christian community, what if you had, you
know... Meat-free Mondays, yeah.
What if you did meat-free Mondays? Mm-hmm. Like, that would take such a huge portion of the meat consumption out of the market. They would just readjust it, and you would find better alternatives for vegetarianism coming up. You know, some people go on like, oh, I can't eat some of that vegetarian food. It doesn't taste nice, doesn't do this, doesn't do that. Well, you can look into it. There are options, and there are some really good vegetarian recipes out there.
Wow, coming from him.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Coming from me, that's a pretty big statement. But the thing is, it will only get better as more demand comes for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like when they first...
Well, look at the explosion that we've had for meat substitutes now, you know? Like
In probably the last 2 years, it's just gone...
It's gone mental.
Nuts.
Yeah.
And the thing is...
Yeah.
Is as the supply, like the supply to meet the demand goes up, cost comes down.
Yeah.
So it's not unreasonable anymore. Like when you're looking at steaks, you're still talking $26 a kilo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like a meat-free patty, you know, you sit there and go, oh, well, there's only four and in the packet and they're costing me X amount. Well, when you weigh them out, weight to price, you're starting to get parity, you know.
This is getting closer anyway.
Mm-hmm. But people aren't seeing that. And so
they kind of look at it, it's just a vegetarian thing. We'll just compare it against the fresh veggies rather than against the meat that it's supposed to represent.
I guess the question is why, you know, like what does that have to do with environmental stewardship? And obviously there's the animals. That's one thing that I particularly care about.
Mm-hmm.
But there's more than just that, right? You know, when it comes to environmental stewardship, you think of the processes involved in creating all of that meat product.
Every abattoir is on every beef abattoir is located on the side of the river because the amount of water they have to process.
Mm-hmm. Where do you think that waste ends up?
Depending on where, I will just, you know, not to discredit the argument, but I will for the most part say that at least in Australian laws, you can't dump waste back into the rivers anymore. The crocodiles still live on the Fitzroy out the front of the beef abattoir there because that's what they used to do. But you can't do that anymore, and it's disposed of in other ways. But at the same time, too, there is a huge amount of waste that is controlled. When you go into an abattoir, they've got massive tanks of chemicals in there. And it's not necessarily that they're pumping chemicals in, but they've got to have everything for refrigerants, for chills, for everything like that to keep the meat fresh. Because from the second you kill the animal, there's a use-by date on that meat.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got to get it sold before the use-by date. Whereas, you know, the alternative, like when you pick fruits and vegetables, that use-by date is exponentially longer.
Mm-hmm.
Exponentially longer. When you pick fruit, they then can be in transit for up to 2 weeks so they arrive to be ripe.
Mm.
You can't do that with meat.
Mm-hmm. If it arrives ripe, well, you're not eating it.
And the amount... Bundaberg, we're really lucky. There's a large agricultural... community around here.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at, say, the tonnage of sweet potatoes that you can pull out of the ground per acre versus the meat that you would be able to grow off that same acreage, you are using a huge amount more of, I guess, environmental resources to facilitate a meat-eating environment and society than you would if you could take that away.
Mm-hmm. So I just want to cycle back something you were saying, Dave. You mentioned about the animals and whatever, and really, Matt, you're talking about this as well.
Mm-hmm.
But as Christians, we often gloss over the fact that God cares for the animals, not just in the sense that He created them and He looks after them, but one, that He has dominion over them. So that dominion was given to Adam. That dominion was wrestled away in the fall. That dominion was returned through Jesus. Why do you think all the animals listened to Him?
Mm-hmm.
But on top of that, if you even look in the commandments, the Sabbath commandment, I think, is like one of the greatest environmental commandments that you're going to find, because it's speaking from the perspective of animals. So remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shall you labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, not your daughter, not your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor the stranger that is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and all that is in them. So the all that is in them is the animals, right? But in there, it talks about the cattle, your animals, that even your animals aren't to work. And so God put, and that's not to say that He puts equal importance on a cow as He does on a human. That is to say that God even cares about the right treatment of our livestock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and throughout the rest of the law, He tells us how to do agriculture, for example.
Mm-hmm.
He tells us what to do with our waste products as humans, so as to not contaminate the environment.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, God absolutely cares about the environment. That was the verse I was going to read earlier. It was in the very end of the book of Jonah. you know, the book ends by saying,
should not I
spare Nineveh, that great city, wherein are more than 60,000 persons that cannot discern between their right hand and their left hand, and also much cattle.
Hmm.
And then the book ends. And so, you know, it's, you know, it's potentially circumstantial, but I don't think so. Mm-hmm. That God's last words to Jonah are, don't you think I care about the cattle as well?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, so of course, God cares about the environment. God cares about the animals. He cares about, like I said, agriculture, so that we don't destroy the earth. And, you know, that's modern agriculture. We just destroy the earth and we synthetically make it okay again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really terrible.
Yeah.
But we have to do that to sustain the kind of environment that we have created because of our diets and our lifestyles.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think we have a responsibility to modify our lifestyle in a sensible way. It doesn't mean you need to, you know, make stupid choices. It just means you need to make sensible choices, not just for you, but for the earth.
Yeah.
Like and you were saying before, it might cost you a bit more. Who cares? You're doing the right thing.
Just start, like, working your way into it either. Like, it's not exactly like we're... I mean, if you can go cold turkey on, you know, a diet change and just cut it out and then, I mean, go for you. But bring in meat-free Mondays and then extend it to meat-free Tuesdays. And then, like, these things have a roll-on effect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you've got to cut one, cut your red meats out. They create way more damage and waste on the environment than white meats.
Yeah.
You know, and... when you get into white meats, substitute back to seafood, like to fish, because that's the most sustainable of the lot.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, it's still not what God designed for us in Eden.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we keep talking about the fact that we're going to an Eden.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God's going to recreate it. Well, there won't be fish and chips there. you know, I'm not going to get my 3/4-inch steak there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and so... if I'm finding enjoyment in things that aren't going to be in heaven, then I'm perhaps compromising the enjoyment I'll find there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a scary thought to have too.
Mm-hmm.
So God's going to give us the very greatest of fresh produce up there. Yeah. And if we're not in the mindset to, you know, enjoy that, then that could be, you know, I've always said that diet's not a salvation issue, but perhaps it could be. Perhaps it could be a lean-to.
Right?
Yeah.
It depends on the motive.
Yep.
So
you mentioned the word balance before, Luke, and I just wanted to say, you know, some of this stuff could sound a little kooky that we're saying, because if you take it to extremes, it is, right?
Yes.
You know, we're not saying don't drive your car ever again.
Mm-hmm. And we're not saying march on your, you know, your member of parliaments and burn down their office or things like that.
That'll create too much emissions.
we're not advocating, I guess, what you'd call radical activism.
No.
But just like I like the word you used before, Matt. You said education.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really what God is calling us to, is educating people as to how we can live life differently in a way that's sustainable for the earth and us. Like, it doesn't need to be one or the other.
No.
We can survive without destroying the planet.
Yeah.
And getting back to the whole the ministry side of things, they don't have to be mutually exclusive either. I think one complements the other.
Absolutely.
Because sometimes you've got this... Remember that first question we said that it can be one or the other. No. We often talk about living our lives in a way that would attract people to Christianity.
Yeah.
Isn't this part of it?
Yeah.
Because, well, I think that leads into holistic health, which is one of the biggest things that's on the rise at the moment, is the idea of, you know... everything going towards the betterment of your health.
Mm-hmm.
Well, diet, spirituality, you know, that all adds into that whole idea of holistic health.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is actually part of the reason why I started getting into minimalism, is reducing the amount of stuff that I have. And when you actually start going through the amount of stuff in your house, it can be, it's daunting. The amount of stuff that we collect,
But it's embarrassing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is awful. I just think when you move...
When you go through a room and you're like, I bought that because I had this great idea and I've used it once.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, or I actually bought that and I didn't need it, but I needed to fill that corner in my house because it looked bare. Like, that's kind of like, whew.
And then you have kids and it levels up. Like, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you thought that would be a cool thing that would really help, but then you bought it and you never used it. And now your kid's too big for it. And so, but it's just there because you don't want to throw it out and you don't know anyone that should get it. And so,
and as another dad,
yeah.
How annoying is it when people dump huge amounts of gifts for your kids?
Yeah.
Like, and so you're walking around your house and there is things strewn from one end through to the other.
Sarah says to me, it's like, do you, like with the, oh, you know, it's really good that these people bought these gifts and all the rest of it. And I say, let's just not buy him anything because he does it, like, you know, like he's got, like he gets that enough was a high five. Stuff. Yeah, that was a high five for those of you listening. Oh,
that wasn't a slap. I like the way Matt started saying that in a whispering tone, like he was going to get in trouble.
Yeah. we just care about our kids and we don't want them to become materialistic.
Annoying rat bags. Yeah. You know, like if they grow up with this idea that they've got to have everything under the sun to be happy, then that is extremely poor parenting from Luke and I, and that'd be something we're going to be held accountable for.
Yeah,
like our actions, this idea of accountability with environmental stewardship or with anything in life is our action. We are directly accountable for our actions, regardless of how innocent you think they are. We're all accountable for our actions, and so to every degree, we need to keep that in mind.
Yeah,
And just at, you know, in closing, what we're saying here, I think let's not be unfaithful ourselves because of the unfaithfulness of others. You know. Yeah. Just because somebody else is contributing to the problem and your little bit is not going to really count that much doesn't mean you should not do your little bit.
It doesn't give you a get out of jail free card.
No. So you, I, we all need to do what we know is best.
Yes.
And if we're doing that, like you said, we're accountable.
Yeah.
Yep.
So with that, we'll wrap this one up. We'd love to hear your thoughts in the comments and also...
Feel free to tell us where we're wrong and where we can improve on. We'd love to hear your feedback.
That's right. And also, as you will probably have noticed, we're not reading reviews at the beginning of our episodes, and that's because we've run out. And so if you guys want to feature and get a shout out in our episodes, please jump on and
leave us an Aussie nickname.
That's right. And an Aussie nickname as well. So God bless you guys, and we will see you next week. And that's the end of another episode. Just before I head off, I want to encourage you to go over to our page on Facebook and also our account on Instagram and follow us there, because that is where we interact with our listeners and we would love for you to enter in and join the conversation. Also, while you're signing up, I would also recommend signing up to our mailing list on our website, oztabletalk.com.au. If you do that, you will receive our exclusive content, because occasionally we do release exclusives and they only go out to our mailing list. So I would strongly recommend you go and sign up for that. If you have a few more minutes to be one of the most amazing listeners on the planet, you can go over to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review, because reviews help us to grow and they help other people to find us. So if you want to help us reach those goals, please jump in and give us a review. The final message that I'd like to leave you with is to let you know about our Patreon account. Now, Patreon is a way for creators to get paid for creating, and ultimately what we do does cost money to get us hosted and have the services that we need to run the podcast. And so if you'd like to help us do that, jump over onto patreon.com/OzTableTalk, and you can give anything from even $1 a month upwards. But at different levels, there are different benefits, different rewards that we want to give you just to say thank you for being an amazing supporter of ours. If you can't afford that, we would just gratefully accept your prayers, because that is what our ministry runs on. And so with that, I will leave you to your day, and thank you so much for listening to this episode. We look forward to seeing you guys next week.